Pasuk Chof Aleph. We ended last week with basically the end of the story of Yerovam ben Nevat. And now we move back over to Malchus Yehuda. To the kingdom of Rechava. And the Pesukim here seems simple and straightforward, but there's a lot of subtlety here that we're going to have to understand properly. Now, to understand this properly, we have to preface with a simple thing. We already know that the Navi very much harps on the faults of the Jewish people. And the Navi, if the Jewish people worship Avodah Zarah, what will the Navi say? The Jewish people worship Avodah Zarah, right? The tricky thing is that the Navi does not tell you numbers. Numbers. And if you had 2 million people worshipping Avodah Zarah, or 3 people worshipping Avodah Zarah, the Navi would express it in the same way. The Jewish people served Avodah Zarah. We have cases of that where you're actually able to make out the numbers by yourself, knowing the context. And we're meant to use that as indications that in other places, well, not that we can infer from there what the numbers were in those other cases, but we can just infer from there that you don't know what the numbers are. The fact that it sounds very general and inclusive is no indication of what the numbers were. Were they 2 or were they 3 million? No indication at all. Because, yes, the Navi, if there are a few people worshipping Avodah Zarah, that's enough for the Navi to level an accusation against the Jewish people as a whole.
Why does it seem like there's a shift in Torah? Like Moshe less parshas was taken down for calling them lowering. Why are you saying Lamatav Moshe La'azav Anai? The sensitivity of La'azav Anai doesn't seem to transfer to the scuba to the medium when, you better be careful. You're calling it all of the Avodah Zarah. There's a lot of stuff you can be calling the Avodah Zarah here.
So David is asking, Moshe Rabbeinu was taken to task for what seems to be a slip of the tongue in disparaging the Jewish people. And here we're being told that that's the way the Navi operates. So the big difference is, and Adarabba, this is the Mepharshim emphasized that here Moshe did not say it in the name of Hashem. He gave his own take. This was him getting angry, right? That you're going with the Mahalakh of the Ramban. The Rambam also talks about this, right? That the sin of Moshe was that he got angry. The Rambam takes it even further. The famous Rambam in analyzing the Chet of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is important to understand. Without the rabbis, this brings out our point. Moshe Rabbeinu said a lot worse things about the Jewish people. He wasn't taking the test for them. Why? Because those who were saying, as a Navi, conveying the word of Hashem. He told the Jewish people, you've been rebellious against Hashem from the day that I got to know you. Not taking the test for that. Because there, it's Shina Medaberes Mitzvah Groiner. It's Hashem speaking from his throat. Adarabba, the Rambam says, the way the Rambam puts it, it so much brings out the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu when we understand what his sin was. The Rambam says that the dynamics between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people were such that he always reflected exactly where they stood with Hashem. And therefore, they were always able to look at Moshe. If Moshe looked pleased, they knew that Hashem was pleased with them. If Moshe looked ecstatic, they knew that was what Hashem was showing right now. If Moshe looked slightly irritated, they knew that something was off. If Moshe looked down, they knew that they were in trouble. And therefore, the Rambam said the Jewish people used to always look to Moshe. They would follow not just his words, but his facial expressions to see their standing in Hashem's eyes. And therefore, when Moshe one time expressed a displeasure that did not reflect Hashem, that was considered a great failing on his part. Who Moshe Rabbeinu was. But that's, what's that? Oh, that's right. So, that's the fundamental understanding. Hashem does operate that way. Hashem operates through his disease of magnifying faults for the purpose of improving the people even more. That's what the Nevi'im were there for. Why don't we have the Nevi'im today? No, I know we don't have the Nevi'im today. Because the Jewish people reached a point where they stopped appreciating it, started resenting it, and if we would have the Nevi'im today, we wouldn't stand them. Right? The reason why we wouldn't be able to stand them. Any little thing, right? To have a Nevi'im would come to shul and stand up after davening, and he would say, you're all a bunch of idolaters. Why? Because somebody wasn't thinking the right thoughts during Shemana Esrei. You get tired of it already. Enough. You know what? And that's the state the Jewish people reached at the time, and therefore we don't have to be into it. We wouldn't be able to handle their admonitions. But why is it important to preface it? What's that? Everybody's mad at him. Exactly. Right? That's exactly it. Okay. So this is an important preface for what's coming. So now let's see. Basak Chopal. Rechavam ben Shlomo Melech.
Perek Yudalit.
Perek Yudalit Basak Chopal. Rechavam ben Shlomo Melech Yerushalayim. Ben Avoyim Va'ach Hashem. Rechavam ben Shlomo reigned in Yerushalayim at the age of 41. Sorry. Ben Avoyim Va'ach Hashem. Rechavam ben Molchai. He was 41 when he took the throne. And he ruled in Yerushalayim for 17 years. The city that Hashem chose to designate his name there, Mikol Shevtei Yisrael, from all the tribes of Israel, which meant that the expectations there were very great.
So, had him in his life?
What's that? Yeah. Yeah. Good Ha'ara. Yeah. The Shem Imai, and his mother's name was Naama Ha'amoinis. Naama Ha'amoinis, she was one of the converts. You know that Shlomo made a campaign of marrying converts. She was one of those converts. She was, actually, I shouldn't say one of those converts.
Wait,
she was a convert.
David is still alive.
David is raising a very good point.
Must have met her.
We're told that Rechavam was 41 years old when he took the throne. Now, we know that Shlomo reigned for 40 years. That means that Rechavam was born the year before Shlomo died. Rechavam was born the year before Shlomo was died. What's that? Right, so Rechavam was 41 when he took the throne. He was born a year before. Wait a minute. Born a year before Shlomo took the throne. I'm sorry. He was born a year before Shlomo took the throne. Not before Shlomo. Shlomo took the throne. Shlomo reigned for 40 years. Rechavam was 41 when Shlomo died. That means that he was born 1 year before Shlomo became king. Right? Okay.
He was 8 years old.
What's that? He was young at the time.
Ten?
I don't remember. He was a boy. Right. He was before Bar Mitzvah.
And he already married. He's already married.
He's already married, yeah. I don't remember. Was it 11, 12? He was under Bar Mitzvah when he took the throne, yeah.
52
and 12. Right. 12. Okay. So here we have to note, and there are some of the Svarim note this point. This means that Shlomo married Naama before he became king. Which in turn means that he married her before his campaign of marrying converts in order to... Which could mean that she really wasn't a part of that whole parsha. She wasn't a part of that whole parsha. This is something separate. Maybe he already had this vision, I don't know, but whatever it is, she was... not part of that package. Now we're going to see, there's a little bit of cloudiness surrounding Naama Ha'amoinis, as we'll discuss.
One more question. Why would he have listened to the Rabbi and not Canaan? He was 41, he was not supposed to be either.
When we say Yeladim, that's what we mean. We're calling him a Yelid in that sense. He listened to the Yeladim that were his age, his pals, rather than the elder advisors who had already been advising Shlomo.
The advisors of Shlomo were significantly older than Shlomo. They were more than 11 years old.
That's right. Okay. So now, Bayas Yehuda Hara Be'ine Hashem. Yehuda did what was evil in the eyes of Hashem. Vayekanu Eisai. And they made Hashem jealous. They did worse than all of the forefathers that had preceded. Okay? And they also built altars and asherim trees. We all know what asherim trees are, right? The Vaidusara trees. Altar give a veil, the tapas kolechana. There was a good high mountain, it was a nice place to make it under fresh trees. They would make these avodah zarah. V'gam kavesh haya ba'aretz, and there were also kedeshim, harlots, male and female harlots in the land. Asu kuchol atoyav yisagoyim asher harish Hashem ifnei b'nei Yisrael. They did all the abominations that the goyim who had been chased out of Eretz Yisrael before the Jewish people had done. Okay. You want to say something? Okay. What's that? Oh, so it sounds like today, and this is important to note because it wasn't. And here's where we have to go with this. So first of all, Namal Amunis. This is the mother of the Chava. It's stressed a number of times throughout this parsha that she was his mother. Why? So here we have Mamish, a little bit of confusion. Who was Namal Amunis? So a number of the Mepharshim say, the reason that the pasuk stresses time and time again that she was his mother was to say that the reason that he fell was because he grew up under her influence. She came from the wrong places. We know that she was a convert. We know that many of Shlomo's wives soured toward the end of his life. Okay, and the reason that he fell was because he was under her influence. The problem is that this is contradicted by quite a number of Ma'amari Chazal. Manu Chazal says that Hashem tells the Jewish people not to fight Ammon, Ma'ar ben Ammon, because I have two special treasures, right, two treasures, that I want to get out of them. Ruth from Ma'ar and Nama from Ammon. Okay? So that gives a little bit of a different profile. So we're already showing that it's not so simple. Not so simple. Now, we're going to move on meanwhile, and then we're going to come back to analyze the whole thing. So here it sounds pretty bad, right? Just like the 10 tribes sank into the wrong thing, so did Yehuda sink into the wrong thing. They did what was wrong in the eyes of Hashem. Avodah Zarah, Znus, etc., and we name Nama Amunis right at the beginning of this whole piece. So now let's move further, and then we'll come back to analyze this. So it was in the fifth year of Rechavam's reign, Allah Shishak Melech Mitzrayim al Yerushalayim. Shishak, the king of Mitzrayim, rose up against Yerushalayim. And he plundered the treasures of the Beis HaMikdash, the treasuries of the king. He took everything. Why is everything being stressed? What's the everything? He was really one thing that he was after. With all the treasures and everything, the real thing he was after was showing his throne. He took everything. Shlomo also had special golden shields he used in his honor. Plunders that too. So instead of those golden shields, the Chava made copper shields. Right? This is seeing a very significant decline in what his malchus used to be, right? And he left them entrusted with the officers of Shemun Pesach Mesamelech, who were the guards of the king's house. Whenever the king would go from his palace to the Beis HaMikdash, he saw Umar Ratsu. So these officers would hold them up there and he would walk through them. Then when he would pass by, en route, they would hold them up for him, and they'll put them back afterwards. The Yesa Divrei Rechavam, all the rest of the affairs of Rechavam, the Kol Asher also, everything that he did, Haleihem Aksuvim Al Sefer Divrei Hayamim L'Malchei Elul. It's all inscribed in the chronicles kept by the kings of Yehud. And there was ongoing strife between Rechavam and Yerovam all throughout the days of his reign. Vayishkav Rechavam im Avosav, and Rechavam finally died, gathered unto his fathers. Vayikavar im Avosav b'ir David, and he was buried with his fathers in the city of David. V'shem imo Namo HaMoinis, his mother's name was Namo HaMoinis. Again, we're stressing it here because the Mephosh should say she's being associated with the whole story. Okay? And his son Aviyam took the throne on him. If we just leave it at that, it sounds pretty straightforward. There's something that kind of comes to characterize Sefer Malachim. The king started off okay. He deteriorated. That got him into trouble with enemies. Died basically in disgrace. End of story. Which basically brings us to a place that the 10 tribes dropped, Yehuda dropped shortly afterwards, and that's all. That's basically how things move on. Right? Now let's see that it's not mamish as simple as that. First of all, we already noted as far as Namah HaMoinis is concerned. We also have to note as far as Rechavam himself goes. There's a medrash in Shemois that says, Eis HaZomer Yigyah, the post in Shea Hashem says, Eis HaZomer Yigyah, the time. Okay, simply understood, this pasuk means the time for cutting down the grapes has arrived. But Chazal Darshan, the time for a musical reception has arrived. It's talking about the days of Mashiach when we have a musical reception welcoming the righteous kings. Who? Five righteous kings, it says. David, Shlomo, Rechavam, Abiyam, his son, is also accused of doing what was wrong in the eyes of Hashem. And Asa, who is noted later in the Navi as a tzaddik. What's that? Right, we're talking about the first five. It's grouping these five, the first five. They were Yishapat, Zufi, great tzaddikim afterwards. So, first, we'll preface, and we'll just lay it down, that yes, what we're seeing here is again a phenomenon of no. The 10 tribes and Yehuda were not comparable at all. It was not the same story at all. The 10 tribes fell into what they fell into. Yehuda was very far from that. Yehuda, by and large, all throughout their history, was a nation that remained dedicated to Hashem's service. Just what? The problems that had begun sprouting in Shlomo's days started to sprout a little bit more. By and large, the problems were the influence within the royal family of some of those wives who already started going back to their old ways. In Shlomo's day, it was just starting to sprout. They did it in privacy. As it moved on, they started becoming a little bolder about it. But this was not something that spread across Klal Yisrael. It wasn't. And just to bring this out, we're going to take this Parshah, Malachim, which is seems pretty simple. They did what was wrong, they suffered from Shishak, etc., things dropped. Now, in Divrei Hayamim is pretty much a running parallel to the rest of Nas, the rest of the narrative of Nas. A lot of times you have more elaboration. So here, I want to read the same story in Divrei Hayamim, and we'll see how the dynamic was very different. And it just seems so simple here. All the dynamics between Yehuda and Binyamin. So if anybody wants to follow along, I open them all up. If you want to actually see inside the Sefer, here you have an English one if you want. We're going to see Perek Yudbeis. Oh, you actually have it there. Okay.
No, this is it.
Is that? Oh, no? Okay.
No.
Perek Yud Beis, chapter 12. Not going to read through the whole parak, because a lot of it is just repetition of what we saw here. But some very important things. So first of all, Divrei Hayamim, before chapter 12, in the end of Perek Aleph, makes it clear that the whole reality in Yehuda was very different than in the 10 tribes. First of all, as we already saw, as soon as Yeravim started with the Shem, the Kahanim and Levim left him en masse. Right? Remember we saw that back then? The Kahanim and Levim left him en masse, but not just the Kahanim and Levim. It also says that the conscientious, there was a very strong representation from all the different tribes who left Yeravim and went up to join Shevet Yehuda. Right? We mentioned this at the time, but that's why we know that after all said and done, we still have all representation of all the 12 tribes among us today. Because of what it says there. It says that Yehuda was very much dedicated to Hashem. It says that the fact that they came together like this very much strengthened Rechavah. And for 3 years, he was dedicated to the service of Hashem very conscientiously. Okay? That's Perek Yud Aleph. Now he begins Perek Yud Beis. Now it says that he also spent that time fortifying a number of the different cities in his kingdom. And it's becoming more powerful, more solidly based, etc. Now we're moving to Perek Yud Beis, which is basically what we just learned, just in greater elaboration. As the kingdom of Rechavah became better established, but well established, he became strong. He forsook the Torah of Hashem to call Yisrael Iman. And all of Yisrael followed his example. This was in the fourth year of his reign, right? The first 3 years he was strong and loyal. Was in the fifth year of his reign, so Shishak, the king of Mitzrayim, came up against Yerushalayim. Kimalu b'Hashem, because they had begun betraying Hashem. Okay, go through Pasuk Gimel Dalit. It concludes with Vayomayad Yerushalayim. Himamish, he quickly moved, swept across the land of Yehuda until he actually reached Yerushalayim. Now his mamish standing off against Yerushalayim. So first of all, why did this happen to Yerubim? This is obviously a response to the sins. Why did this happen to Yerubim? Yerubim didn't suffer from any enemies throughout his career. Why did this happen to Yerubim? So if you remember, we already discussed there was a very different dynamic between Hashem and Yerubim and Hashem and Rechavah. That's right. Hashem, Yerubim did what he did. Hashem basically cut off ties. Goodbye and good luck. Which includes two things. I'm not going to be there providing you with special bracha. I'm also not going to be on top of you if you sin. You'll be like the other nations of the world. Sin, 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 until you reach your maximum, and then we'll get rid of you. That's what happened with Malchus Yisrael. Rechavam is a different story. Rechavam, this is Malchus Yehuda. This is the pious nation. Hashem says, as soon as they stop being problems, I'll be punishing you. That's why Hashem operates with Klal Yisrael. That's why Klal Yisrael, on the one hand, is the most oppressed nation. But isn't it ironic that it's the most oppressed nation, but also the most long-lasting nation? I don't know about the Chinese, okay. But I mean in terms of a nation that's been bouncing around the world. There's no other phenomenon. There's no other such phenomenon. Right? A nation that's been bouncing around the world for so long, and everybody's out, the greatest empires in the world are out to destroy them, they're still here. The answer is, it's not a paradox. One is the reason for the other, if we understand it from a spiritual perspective. The way the nations of the world works is that Hashem says, you have your time now, until you fill it all the way up, I'm ignoring you. Once you filled up, we move you on the scene, someone else has moved on instead. But the Jewish people, it's not like that. They sin, boom, they sin, boom, a little bit. Each time they're punished. And therefore, they never reach a place of maxing, and they're never destroyed. They'll always remain. There's a lot of depth to that. So now, this is what's going on here. Yehuda starts slipping right away. Mitzrayim is invoked to call them to order. That's really what this is here. not to destroy them, not to punish them, but to wake them up. So what happens? Shishak comes, he comes all the way to Yerushalayim. Ushmael HaNavi, here's another difference between Ushmael HaNavi, Ba El Rechavim Mesorah Yehuda. Ushmael HaNavi is sent to Rechavim into the offices of Yehuda, Asher Nesfal Yerushalayim with Shishak, but gathered into Yerushalayim because of Shishak, right? They were all now fortified in Yerushalayim, holding themselves up in Yerushalayim. Bayim Elohim, Ushmael said to them, Koyama Hashem. Here's what Hashem said. Atem azavtem oisi. You forsook me. Apani ozavti eschem biyad shisha. You forsook me, so I forsook you at the hand of shisha. We're reading the Rayon now. You realize in the video. We're reading the Rayon. Okay. What's the response? We saw what happened with Yerubbaal. What did Yerubbaal do? He invited the Navi for lunch. But it made no effect on him whatsoever. Right? When another response is sent to him. Here, immediately the response is, Vayikan'u Sarei Yisrael v'amelech. The officers of Israel and the king lowered their head. Vayomru tzadik Hashem. And they said, Hashem is just. We did slip. We did slip. This is just. We deserve this. This is already a different story. Right? This is a different story. Ubir'oiz Hashem ki nishne'u. So when Hashem saw that they had submitted themselves, they accepted the rebuke humbly. The word of Hashem came to Shmaya saying, Nishne'u. Ah, they've lowered themselves. They bowed their heads. I'm not going to destroy them. I'm going to spare them. They're at the, you know, they're almost on the brink of destruction. I'm going to spare them. I'm not going to allow my wrath to be spilled out onto Yerushalayim in the hands of Shishak. He's going to stop here. What happened? Did they defeat Shishak? No. No. Hashem put it into the heart of Shishak to leave it at that. They are going to remain tributaries to him. I'm not letting them off the hook. But he's going to withdraw now, and they're going to stay under him. They're going to be vassals, okay? What was the problem? The problem, Hashem says, I have high standards. And of course, you know, those first 3 years, Rechavim kept to the standards, right? And there in the Rayyamim it says that he was busy fortifying his cities. The Mepharshim say that what was going on was, as long as Rechavim felt threatened by Yerubbaal, he made sure to stay on his best behavior, to perform at his highest. And in order to be performing at his highest, that demanded constant effort, operating at a high level. As soon as he had his cities fortified and he felt okay, I'm protected against Yerubbaal, he allowed his standards to relax. And that's when it started dropping. Okay? So now, Hashem says, it was tough to hold up to my standards? Alright, try Shishak for a couple of years. Right? See, if you prefer to be subject to him or subject to me. That's the dynamic. So therefore he says, you accepted the rebuke because you're facing destruction. I'm accepting that, but that's not good enough. I want you to really learn the lesson. Okay? So now, Bayal Shishak Melech Mitzrayim al Yerushalayim. So he did invade Yerushalayim. So he didn't destroy it. But he completely humbled Yehuda. And as we saw here, now we're coming back to what is in the Malachim, right? He plundered the treasuries of the Beis HaMikdash, the Oitzos Beis HaMelech, and the treasuries of the palace. Sakol Lokach, he took it all. He took the golden shields that Shlomo sent. And again, here in the Rayyamim it says, like we saw here, that he made himself copper shields instead, which he would use when, interesting, note this, it doesn't say that these were, whenever he went around, they were walking with these shields ahead of him. It says, when he came from his house to the Beis HaMikdash, they would stand with these shields that he would walk through. The Malbim says, what was he doing? these golden shields that Shlomo had were plundered. So what he did was, he made copper shields to remind him of his drop, of his decline. And when did he use them? Whenever he went to the Beis HaMikdash, this was the time that he would have them hold out those copper shields to remind himself, to keep himself lowered, to keep himself mindful of the lesson. Aha! So here we move ahead a couple of psukim, right? This is psukim, like I said. We move to your pasuk Yud Beis. Yud Aleph describing the sentence we saw here. We move to Yud Beis. Or be kan oy shav vimeno af Hashem. Since he lowered himself, the wrath of Hashem was completely withdrawn from him. Hashem did not destroy him. This is already the next stage. Initially, Hashem said, okay, Shishak is not going to destroy Yerushalayim, but we're going to keep them under his reign. Now, what happens here? It's one thing when a person is facing destruction. He gets a message from a Navi, and he does tshuva. That's very nice. You often didn't do that either. That's very nice. Admirable. But Hashem says, wait. And this is something so fundamental and so relevant. You're inspired, you're turned on. The question is, now are you going to take the step to turn it into something lasting? Something so relevant. So often we're inspired. But the challenge is, are you going to be able to take the initiative to hold on to it? Will we still see the effect of this in a year from now? Or are you going to be back to square one after it wears off? Inspiration is a gift from Hashem. It's a gift from Hashem, but you're expected to work with it. Do not expect that inspiration will carry you over for a long time. If you're not going to take concrete steps to hold on to it, to work with it, it'll go away. That's why, for example, it says, after Nes Chanukah, remember the lesson of the Rambam? After the Nes Chanukah happened, they did not establish Chanukah as a Yom Tov on the spot. It was a year later, the Rambam tells us. A year later. Much the same idea. The question is, are we going to see that the effect is lasting? Are we going to see that the awakening of the Jewish people that happened at the time is something lasting? If so, we can consider this a turning point in history that deserves being marked and celebrated for everyone. So here, what was it that brought him back into Hashem's complete graces? The fact that after he did this tshuva, he didn't say, okay, fine, I'm inspired, then we'll see what happens next week. He made himself these copper shields. He had them, put them up there, make sure I'll constantly keep mindful of it. And it held out. It held out. Hashem waited some time. It held out. Then Hashem completely withdrew his wrath. And in addition, the Navi adds, "Vegam Yehuda hayad dvarim tovim." Isn't it, well, so to speak, a concession on the part of the Navi? In addition to that, Yehuda had merits. Let's note that, right? This is something that sometimes you lose, the small nuances. The Navi will go on at great length about the sins, while the merits are contained sometimes between the lines, sometimes in small nuances. Hey, the Navi comes and says they did terrible things. Hashem brought up Shishak Melech Mitzrayim, and that was that. Right? And then we see that the whole dynamic was a little different. It was a call to tshuva. They did the tshuva. Hashem accepted it fully. Hashem withdrew his wrath. And then the Navi adds, and you know what? The truth is that the people of Yehuda actually did have merit, so they deserve this. A whole different story. Right? If we're contrasting it to the way the Navi relates to Shittei Yisrael, we have to realize this as we're learning not. Tiny little comments in favor of the Jewish people have to be noted and magnified, because it means an awful lot. The job of the Navi was not to express favor to the Jewish people. The job of the Navi was to harp on the faults. Okay, then it says, after this, Vayishchazeka melech Rechavam Yerushalayim, Vayimlod, and Rechavam became much stronger now in Yerushalayim. He continued to rule. etc. Okay. Then the parsha ends by saying, "Vayas ki vayeshu liboy lidrashas Hashem." But he did what was wrong, did evil, because he did not really set his heart out on seeking out Hashem. So the Mefarshim notes, and it's already a whole different story. First, he's accused of doing what was evil in the eyes of Hashem, because of all the Avodah Zarah, etc., etc. He does tshuva. And we say, but we're not forgiving him all the way. We're not completely granting it. He earned that Hashem completely withdrew the punishment. But yet, the ending note is, but it was still bad. Why? Not because he did Avodah Zarah or anything like that. He did not set his heart on seeking out Hashem. In other words, he wasn't completely dedicated as he should have been. There was a lack of his passion. There was a lack of a level there. But this already suffices to show us that the dynamic is not what it sounds like at first glance. We're talking about a nation that's mindful of Hashem. We're talking about a nation that is serving Hashem. Not the same as the 10 tribes. The 10 tribes is not exactly what it seems. It's not the same as the 10 tribes and nothing. That's all. A good one. Okay.